The next matter on calendar is Kinder versus State. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly. Case number 62401. Are counsel ready to proceed?
I am ready, Your Honor. Ready, Your Honor.
Mr. Kuhn, please do so. And I see that no reply brief was filed, so there's no opportunity to reserve rebuttal time.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Harold Keene. I represent Christopher Kinder in this matter. And if I may boil to his essence, this case began when the FBI called the Nye County Sheriff's Office in October of 2011. The information in the call was that Mr. Kinder had been convicted in 1999 of lewdness with a minor, and that sometime in 2009 the FBI developed a belief that Mr. Kinder was in possession of child pornography based on Mr. Kinder's use, alleged use anyway, of certain file sharing programs to enable distribution of child pornography through the internet. And as I indicated, that call was received on October 11th, 2011. For the next 16 days, the Sheriff's Department essentially did nothing or minimal. They did determine that Mr. Kinder did now live in Pahrump, that he had a DUI, and that is it. And after waiting for 16 days from receipt of the information, the detective, Berukowitz, submitted an affidavit, an application to the court for a search warrant. And that information, of course, contained the 1999 lewdness conviction, which was 12 years old, information from the FBI, which they said happened in 2009, about their belief that Mr. Kinder had porn and that he had used some kind of a program on the internet to access or distribute it, and the fact that my client, Mr. Kinder, now lived in Pahrump. On that scant information, the judge authorized a search warrant, went to the house, and of course they found certain child pornography. Thereafter, I filed a motion to suppress in the district court, contending that the probable cause, such as it was so woefully lacking that it did not justify the grant of a search warrant. And he argued, as I just mentioned today, the 1999 event, the 2009 information, which I characterized as being approximately 2 years and 10 months old, based on the four corners of the affidavit prepared by the officer. And clearly, there had been no attempt made to better specify the dates in 2009. And so my contention, which the state has apparently adopted, is that the information was 2 years and 10 months old. The court issued its ruling finding that there was probable cause, and even if there wasn't, U.S. v. Leon, the good faith exception, made everything okay. And in my appeal to this court, I have urged you to find that the search warrant was improvidently granted, not based on probable cause, based on a number of federal cases. And these federal cases clearly reflect that their child pornography is treated a little bit differently, that old information or relatively old information might be more acceptable or might be more tolerable as it comes to probable cause based on either an inference or a presumption that people who have child pornography are going to keep it. They're collectors. But in my research in the federal courts, there's a question as to whether or not six-month-old information is still fresh enough, 10-month-old, 1-year-old, 13-months-old. And frankly, in my research, that would be the outer limit of time without an additional freshening of probable cause.
Counsel, would you agree with me that the feds, I presume the law that you are referring to does not give us a bright-line time.
Absolutely not. They don't.
But you would, I think maybe this is where you were going, you would also agree that in each of those cases from the 10th, the 2nd, the 6th, all those circuits, there have been other factors elucidated for the search warrant that gave rise to probable cause. Would you agree with me in those
Absolutely,
situations?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And my point, which I'm not making very artfully, I have the flu today and I apologize. Perhaps up to 13 months, maybe there's an argument that you don't have to do anything else. Maybe you don't have to freshen. Maybe just the fact that it's pornography and it's 13 months old, maybe that's enough. However, I think the federal cases are clear that beyond that, beyond the 13-month threshold, that you absolutely have to have a freshening of probable cause to establish that additional criminal activity is ongoing. And my complaint about the whole setup in Knight County is that the officer had 16 days to try and freshen up the probable cause, and you know, I could speculate what he could have done to try and freshen it up, but I think a clever person could do a lot of things if you wanted to. And certainly the officer, being a detective, had some amount of experience. It's not in the record. And he did not do so. So Judge Walker, as I indicated, found that there was probable cause, but also said under U.S. v. Leon that there's a good faith exception and that the officer acted objectively reasonably, and I don't agree with that whatsoever, and I urge you to find that because the officer knew, had to have known that probable cause for a search warrant had to be fresh, it had to be relatively recent, that if it was stale, it wasn't good enough, that he well knew the law at the time, that he did not have to act in any great big hurry to get this warrant because he delayed it 16 days before he made application, and in that 16 days he certainly could have done a number of things to try and freshen up the probable cause, and he included some boilerplate, and I've seen it quite a few times in my 30 plus years where there's a paragraph in the search warrant that says he is a pedophile, therefore he's a collector, therefore he will have what he had a long time ago. He will keep it forever and never throw it away. And that particular paragraph in the search warrant affidavit was without foundation. It was just a naked statement. Certainly in 16 days, the state could have potentially found some learned treatise suggesting that this might have been more true, or certainly in 16 days they might have focused more on Mr. Kinder to try and figure out a more pertinent expert kind of analysis or evaluation.
And what about the fact of his prior conviction? The state cites a case called United States versus Irving, a Second Circuit case, where apparently, according to their brief, the information was as old as that in this case, the FBI information. But because there was a prior sexual offense conviction, the court said that was sufficient in this kind of unique area of the law and upheld the district court's refusal to suppress that. I may be misstating what that case holds, but could you comment on that and whether the prior conviction brings that within the realm of the totality of circumstances that would be make Judge Wonker's ruling justifiable?
Last night in my fevered condition, I thought, I better look at that to see what that case actually said, and I confess I did not. My suspicion is that there was freshening in that case also. But I didn't read it, and I don't know, and I wish I had.
Thank you for your candor. I appreciate your candor.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I've done this a few times before the court. It seems like the most critical case is the one you haven't read, and it's the one you're sitting over here and you realize, oh, geez, I wish I'd have read that, but that's me.
Well, let's skip the Irving case. What should we make of the prior conviction and whether that is part of the totality of the circumstances that made Judge Wonker's estimate appropriate, and if not, the officer's actions not intentionally violative of the defendant's rights?
Well, I mean, it's a conviction for lewdness, so certainly it suggests some interest in children. It doesn't, in my mind, necessarily make a connection to possessing pornography, although, we're not stupid. It's certainly an inference. It could readily be made that if you like children, then maybe you like pictures of children, too. But my contention is if the fact that you have or had pornography a year ago or 2 years ago is insufficient by itself to say that he has pornography now, then I think the fact that he was convicted 12 years ago adds very little to the probable cause analysis about whether or not he still has nasty pictures in his possession 2 years and 10 months later after the FBI did their investigation.
Does it matter that he apparently left California and was later discovered in Pahrump? I couldn't tell reading it whether there was some inference that, you know, he fled California knowing arrest was imminent.
That's a good question. I mean, I happen to know that he moved to his parents' house in Pahrump. Everybody.
What does the record show on that?
The record doesn't show any of that,
okay,
of course.
Okay.
And nor does the affidavit say why he left California. I think it suggests by the time the FBI got around to doing what they were doing, Mr. Kinder had relocated to Pahrump. In the good faith analysis, it seems like it's a bludgeon that we have to endure in Nye County. Everything is good faith. And I noticed I was having dinner with an attorney last night, and he said, oh, look at the Supreme Court's decision in, it was a recent one you had on December 26th, Cochran. And I read that one, and the greater protection to Nevada citizens was cited in that matter. And they also, there was a discussion of Leon and good faith, and I think in this case, if an officer is a detective, he clearly has experience, he clearly has to know that you need probable cause, he clearly has to know that if the probable cause is 2 years and 10 months old, that it needs to be freshened, and if he knows that it has to be freshened, he also has to know that you need more than just confirming that he has a driver's license or that he moved to Pahrump. And one of the bases for concluding that good faith is not an exception, that Leon should not apply, is if the affidavit, the search warrant affidavit, was so lacking in probable cause as to render official belief in its existence entirely unreasonable. And I think that's the situation here. I know that all people convicted of child pornography have two strikes against them in any analysis in any court. I'm not implying here. But as it concerns probable cause, I think they still deserve the same protections as the rest of us, because once we allow it in child pornography, then we'll allow it in possession of drug cases, and once we allow it there, we'll allow it in having reading materials that aren't satisfactory to the state, and it's just not right. And even though I have 2 minutes left, unless you have another question, I'd ask you to find there was no probable cause and to throw all this stuff out.
Does anyone, do either of you have further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you kindly. By the way, today's my 60th birthday. Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Counsel, as you approach, I'm going to, I hope, shortcut part of your presentation. I want to go back to Justice Pickering's question about Irving. In Irving, in fact, there was a 5-year delay, but what freshened the PC in that case was two different things. Another charge, as I recall, and more recent attempts by the individual in that case to have sexual relations with a child. As I asked the appellant in this case, there's no bright line. Do you agree with that premise?
Absolutely.
Do you then agree that we can be 10 months, 5 years, but that the distinguishing factor in all of these cases is that there has to be something else in between or within that time frame that gives rise to some new, if you will, PC?
I disagree that there has to be some fresher information.
And you base it on what authority?
There are actually quite a few Federal Circuit cases where there is no intervening or fresher crime or untoward conduct. And correct me if I'm wrong, I believe in Irving it was a two-year gap. And there are so many of these circuit cases that I get them all mixed up. I believe it was Riccardi where there was a five-year gap. And Your Honor is correct. In Riccardi, I believe there were some attempts or some untoward advances on young boys that were intervening in Riccardi. So in that case, you would be correct. There was an intervening piece of information. However, there are numerous circuit court cases in the United States federal system where there was no intervening conduct, and we have even larger time frames than we have here. I will look at this in a worst-case perspective. We don't know exactly when in 2009 the FBI determined that the appellant was uploading and downloading child pornography, but I will concede we should look at it as if it were 2 years and 10 months. I found a case that's not included in my brief that I think is very important. It's United States v. Maldonado, or pardon me, Morales Aldehondo, and that's 524 Federal 3rd 115. And in that case, there was a gap of 3 years and 10 months. And essentially what happened was the, I believe it was Immigration and Customs Enforcement, received information that a gentleman had ordered some child pornography from one of these online vendors 3 years and 10 months-ish after the fact. And they found no intervening activity or offenses. But in that case, the search warrant was granted, it was challenged, and it was deemed to be appropriate because the officer in their affidavit seeking the warrant did explain that based on, I believe it was, and check me to make sure I'm not wrong, but I believe it was the ordering of a substantial quantity, that the individual was a collector. And they go on.
We don't have that here.
I beg your pardon?
We don't have that here.
We do not, but we have something extremely analogous, which is that
1999 conviction?
Because of the 1999 conviction, we can see that this individual, this defendant, has pedophilic tendencies.
So maybe the rule should just be if, this is going to sound facetious, I don't intend it to be that way. The fact of the matter is that we establish as a bright line rule that if you are once a pedophile, that there is no end time or end condition upon which you could ever get past that designation. Once a pedophile, it goes on indefinitely as a collector. Regardless of the amount that you have, regardless of a conviction for lewdness, regardless of recent patterns of harassment, regardless of an affidavit with certain allegations of assault, we just, you know, and I'm not being facetious. I mean, pedophilia is something that's of great concern, I think, to everyone. So maybe that's what we should do.
Well, some professionals certainly do believe that pedophilia would be just like alcoholism, i.e., a problem that you never actually shake, that you deal with for your entire life. But I don't think there should be any bright line rules. I think that it really boils down to Gates, that it's always about a totality of the circumstances. In this case, were the only information in the affidavit to be that this gentleman had a 1999 conviction for child lewdness, I would tend to say that granting a search warrant would have been unreasonable. However, as we know in this case, that is not the only information in the affidavit. We have, instead of one incidence of pedophilia, we have two incidences that bookend a decade. So I think it's very important that each case gets looked at individually. In this case,
what, if anything, was the good faith exception that the court found, and other than determining that the address was in fact correct where this defendant lived in Pahrump, did your officer do in support of his affidavit?
The officer based his request for the affidavit primarily on the information he did receive from the FBI. However, it is clear that he did look into the defendant's criminal background, so it's not like he just sat there doing nothing. Now, what else he did, the affidavit is silent. But I think it's very important as a public policy that, especially in a case like this where it's a type of crime where investigations may take years, that we don't incentivize officers to actually be too hasty. We don't know, because the affidavit is silent, as to what other steps Detective Berukowitz took between receiving the information, I believe it was on October 11th, and then subsequently requesting the search warrant on October 27th. But are we sure that we want a rule that would incentivize him to immediately turn around that same day after getting information from the FBI and go request the warrant without giving some due consideration to the information he had received and looking at things like criminal backgrounds and possible other avenues of investigation? I think that the 16-day gap is a reasonable one, especially in the area of law enforcement where investigations are complex, and when you're talking about getting a warrant and invading someone's privacy, should be carefully considered at all levels, from the officer to the magistrate to the district court judge and to yourselves.
What standard of review should we apply to the two determinations, one, that the totality of the circumstances supported PC, and two, that even if they didn't, the officer was in good faith? What are the standards of review that, if you were writing an opinion in your favor, that you say would obtain?
For the totality of the circumstances regarding whether or not it was appropriate to issue the warrant, I think that we should look for clear error on the part of the magistrate. And let me double-check that, because I know I
put it in. Well, the factual determinations, perhaps, but whether or not those factual determinations add up to PC, you also contend is a clear error or deferential review?
Yes, Your Honor.
Not de novo?
No.
Okay. And then on the good faith?
On the good faith, an officer should be able to pose the question of whether or not there's PC to a magistrate, and I think the standard of review should be to look for whether or not there was any obviously untoward, sinister, or improper conduct by the officer. I know Mr. Keene is saying that the officer, based on his experience, should have obviously known that the information was too stale, but I disagree. I think that the Leon case stands for the proposition that when officers are acting in an unnefarious way, in the absence of any evidence that they're actually engaged in wrongdoing, that they should be allowed to rely on the magistrate's judgment because they are the greater authority on that topic. And if the officer, if the officer is out of his mind or, should clearly know that it's too stale to even ask for the warrant, it would be very difficult to explain all of the cases that are in the United States Circuit Courts. And there are quite a few where they don't have that freshening information, where it's based on a prior conviction, or simply put, it's not based on a prior conviction at all. It's just perhaps one transaction, but involving uploads and downloads or a large quantity of pornography where it suggests that the person is a collector. So I think that it's just patently wrong to think that Officer Berukowitz should have known better than to ask for the warrant. And once again, it would be dissuading good law enforcement practice to tell him, no, you should know better just based on your training and experience. I think the Leon case stands for the proposition that unless there's some sort of wrongdoing or there's something where the officer is, purposely submitting a warrant that doesn't even list facts that would support PC, then the officer is entitled to rely on the determination of the magistrate.
Either of you have any questions?
I would like to thank Your Honors. This is my first opportunity to argue in front of you, and it's a great honor. And I would like to thank the birthday boy, Mr. Keene. It's always been a pleasure to practice with him, and I look forward to seeing you all again in the future.
Thank you so much. I thank both counsel for their briefs and argument and their exemplary performance today. The matter will stand submitted and will be in